It's time to get chiseled with Rob Hamadani.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chiseled. Why do we call it Chiseled? Because we're all a work in progress. Hello, I'm Rob Hamadani. I'm your host. I'm the author of Better Than You Think, and I'm also a real estate agent for the last 21 years. And today, I have a guest who is a real estate agent as well, but he's also an Ironman. And Aaron West has participated in several Ironman competitions. I'll let him tell you how many. And he's probably one of the smartest guys I know. And he won't claim to be smart, but he's one of the smartest guys I know. And he's a fun guy to chat with. He's disciplined. He's got a great real estate in Modesto, California. And where the heck that is, I have no idea. Aaron, welcome to the show. How you doing today, buddy?
Thank you very much. I'm doing very well. Modesto is about an hour east of San Francisco and an hour south of Sacramento. So we are the almond capital of the world. So about 98% of the almonds that people eat are all grown in my neck of the woods, which is Central Valley. So lots of farmland. We're kind of turning into a suburb of the Bay Area, but a lot of farmland.
Well, I'll take that as something I learned today as the almond capital of the world. I didn't know that. Thank you for educating me.
You bet.
I told you you were a smart guy. See that? So Wes and I, we've talked many times over the years. Again, we probably met each other about 15 years ago at one of our Brian Buffini events. And every time I talk to this guy, he just inspires me, not just from the Ironman perspective, but just from his knowledge and his sense of logic about life and a business and money. And one of the things Wes and I have talked about is he feels that he has a calling to talk about money because people, I guess, in general, maybe are afraid to talk about money. They think it's too personal. They don't want to share their ideas. So, Wes, if you don't mind sharing with us, like, when did you feel like this calling to talk about money and finances came to you?
Well, it started with I had a horrible relationship with money, and I have always been in sales. You know, my dad was a talker, and I've always been a talker, and I have had the ability to out-earn my spending. So my first job in true sales was with a real estate company, and I was making $13,000 a year. And I was just as broke when I left that company making $125,000 a year as I was when I'd started 10 years earlier, because I allowed the lifestyle creep to happen because I wasn't comfortable with money. I was afraid of wealth. I was afraid of having money, just like my father was, just like my grandfather was. So I had one of my mentors ask me a question one time when I was talking to him about this. And I said, I don't know what my problem is. And he said, what's your dad's relationship with money? And it was really the first time in my life, truly, that the thought had ever crossed my mind about the train tracks that your parents and your grandparents and your aunts and uncles have laid for you, that you don't even know that you're taking this road down life or this train track down life in these different areas of your life. And I realized that, oh my gosh, I am reliving my dad's life right now. We owned our house, but they've only owned one house that I remember and the two houses in my entire life. And they still rent a house that me and my brother bought for them. And so it started this whole journey of what a good relationship with money looks like. And as I put these disciplines in place and truly started to build wealth and was really fortunate to hang around with and have money conversations with really successful entrepreneurs and millionaires and people that had wealth, that I realized that they were the only people having this conversation. You know, you and I or you and your friends, there's three things people don't talk about when they go to dinner with somebody. It's sex, politics, and money, right? And most people will talk about politics, sex, and money in that order. And it's the last thing people talk about because most people think of where they are at net worth wise, and I'll just use net worth as an example, as either a greater than or less than. So they say, I'm not going to say that I'm only worth X if this person is worth Y, because that means that I'm inferior to them. When the reality is that we are where we are at because of the decisions that we've made or the decisions that we haven't made. And when you talk to somebody who has wealth or who has built wealth, they've all been where you were. I remember being $60,000 in debt. That was my net worth, was $60,000 in debt. But I now have a perspective that if I'm talking to somebody who is trying to build wealth, if I know where they are, I can help them with the challenges that they face. Or if I'm speaking to somebody who has more wealth than me, they know where I am and they can have a conversation with me that's truly building me up to help me be successful. And the challenge or the problem for most people is that they don't ever have that conversation. They put on this facade of everything is okay or keeping up with the Joneses or that we're building wealth, but the reality is that they're living paycheck to paycheck. And they just don't know how to have that conversation. And there are people like Dave Ramsey who speaks to a very specific group of people, and it's the spenders is who he speaks to. But he speaks at a second grade level. It's all about just getting out of debt. He also inadvertently speaks to the savers, but for a very different reason. He resonates with them, and that's a problem. And so they live the Dave Ramsey life when that's not necessarily the healthiest way for them to build wealth. It's actually a horrible way to build wealth. It's a way to get out of debt. So when you become comfortable, and even if you're not comfortable, soon, and I remember first time I asked you about your net worth and you were like, what are you talking about, Aaron? But because I'm comfortable about it, we were able to have a conversation to where we were able to talk about things that you probably had only talked about with either your financial advisor or your accountant.
Yeah,
and
right.
To me, that's just wrong. Money is a tool, not a person. Money is a pawn that we use to buy. Money gives us choices. So when you build wealth, you now have choices to either buy back your time, buy back your freedom. Money isn't freedom. Money is choices. And so the better you become at building wealth, the more options you have and the more choices you have. And, you know, money isn't the root of all evil. It's the love of money that's the root of all evil.
Yeah.
And if you look at it like a tool, you know, what's the one? It's easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle than a rich man to get into the kingdom of God. But what it's saying is there's a difference between rich and wealthy. Rich is a state of account. Wealth is a state of being. So you can have a ton of money and be wealthy and rich. But when you're just rich and you don't have that wealth, that lifestyle or that mindset or that abundance that comes from having money, then it's really hard for you to excel or it's really hard for you to get into the kingdom of God. So to me, having conversations about money that are just open conversations is something that I love doing. It's a passion of mine and I wish more people were comfortable talking about it.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about it right now for sure. And thank you for sharing all that. And gosh, you gave me so much here. And I'm like, geez, I should have started more about the Iron Man and then get more into this. I felt like I ripped you off there. But so it's obvious that you're disciplined, right? And I want to go back to the Iron Man real quick, not to backtrack, but to say to do an Iron Man, you had to be disciplined. Would you agree with that statement? And thank you, by the way, for those listening. Aaron was gracious enough to mentor my son a little bit through his journey of Iron Man. And my son would just call him, didn't know him from Adam or Aaron, whoever you want to say, right? And Aaron spent time on the phone with my son, and that meant a lot to me. You're sitting there as a dad, and you're listening to your son speak to a friend of yours about this Iron Man thing. It just melted my heart. So I'm really grateful for you for that, Aaron. So let me say that while we're at it. But the discipline in that, so would you say the disciplines you learned as an Iron Man, did they carry over into these money conversations?
That's actually a great question. I don't think I've had anybody ask me that before. I think that any area of your life that you can create discipline for yourself carries over to other areas of your life, because discipline is just making a choice over and over again to get to a desired result. And so when you make a commitment for something like an Ironman or a triathlon or a marathon or whatever that is, it's the goal is not the Ironman. The goals are the trackable things you do that you can quantify and make individual decisions on. The goal is the result is the Ironman. The goal is that I get up 5 mornings a week and I go for my bike ride, I go for my run, I go for my swim. And by having those things in place, and you start training your mind that you can do these individual disciplines, it carries through to all of the other areas of your life. And so with money, it was just a matter of, for me, making the black and white decision. And I think most of us live the majority of our lives in gray. We always give ourselves options because that's what the brain and that's what the body is there for, is to protect us and give us options. The challenge is, but life is so much easier when you make things black and white, because it's either I choose to do it or I choose not to. And gray, quite frankly, most of the time is I choose not to, because you're giving yourself an out to do it.
Okay.
So when you say with money, I'm going to put 10% of everything I make before I deposit it into my bank account into this account, and it becomes a black and white. And I remember for me, that was the first step, was I created a savings account, and I went in and I renamed it. You know how you can name your accounts in your bank? And I renamed it Not My Money.
Okay.
And I made the commitment to myself that was not my money. That was for Aaron, who I wanted to be 10 years from now. So when I put money into that account, I created separation from what I owned and what I was a steward for. So I was a steward for that money. And then what that did is and I made it a black and white. I told myself out loud, I will not spend this money. I won't make my house payment before I touch this money. If things get so bad that I can't make my house payment, I'll figure it out before I touch this money, because it's not my money. And that was the first discipline that I put in place on my wealth building journey, was creating this separation of ownership. And that's the problem that most people have. And it's the reason that the government takes your taxes first, because as soon as you get it, it's like, no, it's mine.
Yeah.
And the government knows how hard it's going to be to get it back from you, so they take it first. And to build wealth, you have to take that money first, create separation so that you can start building a nest egg that you can build into wealth.
So how many, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. In fact, it takes me back to a book, and I had a podcast, the partner for Mike McAllowitz from Profit First. He was on here a month or so ago, and it just reminds me, you taking your profits first, you take that money first, you put it in an account, it's black and white, and you're not touching it. That's what
it's
that
the same me. Same basic principle, except you're doing it with your personal finances.
Correct. Yeah, I understand it. So let me ask you, Aaron, you made a comment a couple of times. You said a relationship with money. Now, you know, relationship with your money, are you hugging it? Are you sleeping with it? You know, so when, and I know it could be self-explanatory, but explain to the listeners, what's a relationship with money, whether it's a good relationship or a bad relationship? How would you say, if you said, Rob, you got to have a good relationship with money, what does that mean?
So that most of us have a bad relationship with money, both savers and spenders. And typically people fall in that range, somewhere in the range of naturally they're a saver or a spender. So savers come from a place of fear. They're afraid of loss. They're afraid of being broke. They're afraid of the challenges that come from that. So no matter how much, for the most part, no matter how much a saver has in their bank account, they still are afraid that the world is going to change. A client of mine, her mother, in 1990, sold a plot of land to the city to build a school district. They paid her $800,000 in 1990, and in her savings account today is $800,000. Even if she would have put that in just a regular, any kind of account, it would be $1.5 million or $2 million right now. But because she has this fear of losing that money, she's not willing to separate it. She's taken ownership of it. Spenders, on the other hand, are the exact opposite. I was afraid of having money. If I had $100 in my pocket, I was like, where can this go? Because it's got to go somewhere. Uh-huh. I don't like having money in my pocket. And I felt comfortable working with my back against the wall. So to me, when I was broke, I was at my best. I mean, I was working, I was humping, I was grinding. And then I would get the money, I'd put myself back into that broke position, and then I was working, I was humping, I was grinding. So what a health, and so that's the relationship, is fear. A healthy relationship with money, and I'll use this illustration because it's just the easiest one. Most people who win the lottery are in the exact same position that they were 5 years before, like 96% of them. Doesn't matter how much money you win, because they have a relationship with money and this is their comfort zone. So most people, they win $1 million, they go buy a house, a boat, they go spend a bunch of money, they go on vacation because they immediately take ownership of it and they say, I'm going to enjoy life, right? And then they're broke again. And I'm going to flip that illustration and I'm going to ask you, if one of your friends came to you and said, Rob, I just found out I have cancer and I'm going to die soon. And I have a life insurance policy that's worth $1 million. My 8-year-old daughter, she's the only one I have. I want you to take care of this money so that she's in a good place. You're going to make very different decisions as to what you're going to do with that $1 million versus the lottery that came through and wrote you a check for $1 million. Fair?
Fair enough, so yes.
That's because you're taking stewardship of your friend's money. You take no ownership of his money. You take stewardship of his money, and your responsibility is to build that so that his daughter is in a good place. Most of us never take that relationship with the money that we make. We take ownership of all of it. So that was that not my money account, was creating stewardship of, in my mind, I was creating stewardship of that money. The money that I had left over was my money to do whatever I want with, but I was creating a healthy relationship with money, and that I now had control over what my predisposition was. So I was no longer coming from a place of fear. And I still have a spender side to me, and I still fight that battle all the time because those were the train tracks that were given to me. So to me, a healthy relationship is money with money is one where you have the ability to take your money and then separate yourself from it and create stewardship for some of your money. And then you can do whatever you want. If you're a saver and you want to put the rest into savings, that's fine. But to build wealth and to build those choices, you have to steward that money and find places for that money to go to help you build the life that you want to live.
So go back to the stewardship, because some people might say, well, what do you mean by stewardship? You've kind of explained it, but being a good steward of money, could you equate that to being a good manager of money?
A good manager of money, it's you're a steward of your children. They have their own lives, but I'm a steward of my child to help them become a better adult. And so when you create stewardship, when I'm raising my boys, I'm trying to raise them in the good way, the places that I was raised, and then change the bad way from the things that we have, all of us have our issues. So changing those issues, because I understand that I have to help them grow. And so with money, it's having that stewardship of what is it, the talents. It's the illustration of talents. One of them was a steward of the talents. One of them went and hid it in the ground. And then one of them went and spent it, right? Yeah. That's how most of us live, is some people throw it in the ground. It stays exactly where it is. There's some that just go out and spend it and say, well, you gave it to me, but it's not my fault that I spent it. You gave it to me. And then the one that has stewardship of the money said to the owner, this wasn't my money. You gave this to me. And so it was my obligation to make it grow for you. And so that's the mindset that we have to have in our own head with the money that we receive from our work or our commission or our parents or our inheritance, whatever that happens.
Yeah. So what was there a time when it clicked for you? Because you said you're a spender. What was there a moment, a time that it clicked and said, you know what, I can't do this anymore. I got to be a better steward of money.
It was really when he asked me the question, what was your dad's relationship with money like? Because then I went, this can be changed if I know why I'm this way. And now I know why I'm this way. So now I can start addressing and understanding, okay, so why am I spending all this money? It's because that's what I was raised as normal, because that's what my dad did. That's what my grandfather did. That's how they lived their lives. To me, that's what normal was. But I knew that that's not what normal was. So then it just became a matter of going, okay, what are the steps? Because the reality is we can't change our lives overnight. You don't go and say, I'm going to be an Iron Man and go do an Iron Man the next weekend. It's consistent little steps So for me, the first step was I'm going to put $50 from every one of the checks that I get for helping a family sell or buy a home, and it's going in there. And then after about 2 months, I went, nothing in my life is changing. I'm going to bump it. And then I bumped it. And then I bumped it. And then I bumped it. And my life stayed the same because I was so used to being broke that now this money was just in a place. And then when I had enough in there to where I could do something with it, I went and I bought something.
Yeah.
And for me, it was property. And so I bought my first property, and then I was back to broke right where I was comfortable. and I started doing it again. And that was really the wealth journey for the first 5 or 6 years, was me living my life the same way. But because I had put that discipline in place, I was now actually building wealth for that guy that I wanted to be.
That's the guy you wanted to be. So let's talk about that, because there's a quote. There's a quote that you love.
Yeah, it's Ed Milet. That's it. So one of the things, and this only happened a couple of years ago, but one of the things that's been the most impactful to me on my personal growth journey in the last few years, two things, but I'll tell this story first and then I'll just touch on the other one, was I was hearing there's a speaker named Ed Milet. He built this huge business and he was talking to salespeople, and he came out and he's like, you know, I want to talk to you guys because I want to tell you what my version of heaven looks like, because it's different than what most people think. He said, I believe there's a heaven. He said, but what I believe happens when you die is you walk through the pearly gates and St. Peter meets you at the gate and he grabs your hand and he immediately walks you over and he introduces you to somebody. And he said, the person that he introduces you to is the person that you had the potential to become. And he said, and the first time I heard this, I was like, are you kidding me? I cried when I said that.
Yeah, I get a little emotional thinking about it too right now.
My goal, he said, is for that person to look at me and say, well done. And for me to say, I've been chasing your ass my whole life. And that was really when I really started to understand too, that building wealth allows you to have the choices to become a better person and to spend the time and spend the effort on becoming a better person. So I now have a communications coach. All she does is help me see the holes that I don't see in myself when it comes to how I interact with people, how I talk to people, how I show up for people. Am I coming from here or am I coming from here? Am I coming from a place of inquisition or inquisity, or am I coming from a place of judgment? And how fast am I coming to judgment? So there's this, we have so much potential. Every single person, every one of you that's listening to this, and you know, it goes to your Chiseled podcast, right? We're all constantly in a place of work, but you would be amazed at how big of a difference you can make by making just little steps over a long period of time.
Yeah, that's crazy about, you know, being St. Peter showing the person you had the potential to be. Like I always tell people, when I'm laying in my casket and somebody's giving that eulogy and they say, man, Rob had all the potential in the world, I'm jumping out of that casket. I'm going to run up to that pulpit. I'm going to choke that person because I don't want to have any potential left. I want to be on E. Now, I got work to do because I talk abundance, you know, and there's times when I'm like, There's scarcity showing up. And it shows up. And I got to coach myself sometimes to get out of that. And I still come from that place. So you were broke. You said you had your back against the wall. Were you in a place of scarcity then? Or was it just like, I got money, I'm spending it? Was there ever scarcity mentality?
It was all scarcity. I mean, I worked from a place of scarcity. I was like, I'm broke, so I need to continue to work really hard to make money. And, you know, that was one of the hardest transitions that I've ever made, just being transparent, is I woke up one day and I remember I was sitting on this couch right here, and me and my wife were having coffee because we have coffee every morning. And I remember thinking, there is no stretch of the imagination or way that you can convince yourself that you're broke and that you have to work for if you're back against the wall. And I was lost for 4 months, 5 months until, and that was a constant involvement until I understood that you have so much more power when you're running to something than running from. And when you're living a life of abundance and there's abundance coming from you, abundance comes to you. I think that our world is just this big energy. There's so much energy in this world that you give and that you receive. And when you're not giving, you're not receiving. And so now I come from a place of abundance, and I try to come from a place of abundance in everything that I do, because I understand that by me giving in abundance, you know, it's giving slices, receiving loaves.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's so much of that, but that was truly one of the hardest struggles and transitions that I've had in my life, was that coming from a scarcity mindset and truly making that transition to living a life of abundance.
So what is the transition? How do you do that? How does somebody do that?
It's 4 months and a whole lot of wine. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, so there was two things. One is I had built myself to a place financially where I had the time to do the work to figure all of that out. I mean, there's a book called T. Harv Eker, The Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. Okay. So I had read this book in 2013, and I remember where I read it. I remember reading it. He has you do these, put your hand on your heart and say an affirmation, and then say, I have a millionaire mind. And I was riding my bike training for an Ironman, listening to it in my headphones on a back road. And I remember putting my hand on my heart and saying, money comes to me in abundance. I have a millionaire mind, and thinking, man, I'm so glad there's nobody here to see me do this, because I look crazy right now on a bike. And then I reread that book. And when I reread that book, it was such an epiphany to me, because from hanging around so many wealthy people and building a life where there was some abundance, how much truth there was to the difference of how wealthy people think versus those that aren't, and how much truth there was to that living from abundance. And it was reading that and then seeing the people that I knew that were coming from a place of abundance and living from a place of abundance, and seeing the progression in who they were, where they were financially, that it just finally clicked that I have to start making these changes. I mean, I went and bought a nice car, and I mean, I had a 2013 Ford Fusion with 275,000 miles on it. That is not living a life of abundance when you have the ability to buy a new car.
When you have the ability, that's when you have the ability.
I had the ability, right? Yeah. I mean, I was 2013, I was still broke as a joke. So, I mean, it was the right thing for me to do to keep that car. But for me to make that transition, I had to make some changes up here and here to where I was living that life. Yeah. And so that was part of it. It was a gradual thing, but the car was really probably the last thing that I held on to, where one of my friends was like, dude, what are you doing driving that car? Like, all right. So I went and bought a car. So anyways.
So how does abundance, you said this earlier, abundance comes from you. How does abundance come from Aaron West? What does that look like?
You know, I think that it's being generous everywhere. I tip really well. We donate a ton of money to charities. If anybody asks me, any friend asks me for a donation for something that they care about, I'm generously donating to that person. It's being generous with my time. It's being generous with my energy. It's losing the ego, which we all have ego, and meeting people where they are. I remember listening to this podcast once, and this lady had a relationship with this yogi, and she said, oh, everybody is just so attracted to him. He walks into a room and everybody's attracted to him. And she finally asked him, why is everybody attracted to you? And he said, the calmest person in the room is the most powerful. And I think when you come from abundance, there's this power and this energy that comes from it, because there's this calmness. You don't have this keeping up with the Joneses. You don't have all of this frenetic stuff going on in your mind, because you're giving and you're trusting that it's going to come back to you. And it always does.
And when you don't trust, that's coming from a place of scarcity. Would you agree with that?
When you don't trust, it's not coming from a place of scarcity, for sure.
So it's amazing. So you talked about the Ed Milet piece, and you know, St. Peter introducing you to the person that you had the potential to be. So you're sitting here right now, Aaron. How old are you right now?
52.
50, 50, 52, a competitor and a finisher of several Ironmans. Who does Aaron West have the potential to be?
Wow, guy's pretty freaking awesome. I gotta tell you, he's a pretty amazing guy. I'm not him yet, and I've got, you know, one of my friends says that he believes every 7 years we're a new version of ourselves. And so I plan on living to 150. That's my goal. I have it written as a goal, as a result of my activities, is to live to 150. So I'm a third of the way through my life, and there are a whole lot of iterations of Aaron that hopefully every one of them is better than the last. I mean, at the end of the day, I think all of us have the possibility and the ability to impact the world in different ways. And I truly believe that over the course of the next 98 years, that there are going to be opportunities for me to impact the world in a positive way.
Well, you're doing it right now, my friend. You're doing it right now. It's funny. I look at life as like a basketball game. So I tell people I'm 4 minutes into the third quarter. Now you're looking at, I'm looking at you now. You're saying you just,
dude, I'm not even, I'm like 4 minutes into the second quarter.
Well, no, you did the 150 thing and you're a third of the way there. I'm like, all right, he's playing a hockey game. So he's into the second period of his hockey game.
Just barely. I'm like a minute into the second period.
It just started, right? And you're not hitting the penalty box either. Not yet anyway.
That's right. I figure the average age is like, what, 80, 78 now for people. So I'm like a 30-year-old man is how I look at myself.
Well, you're in shape to be that way too, man. That's great. So, Aaron, the question I have for you now is, okay, now we've been talking about trust. We talked about abundance and scarcity and all that. Where does faith, your faith, come into play here? Because this is the Chisel Podcast, and we go down that spiritual road.
So where's
that faith come in here?
I think that, you know, part of it is you have to have faith in order to move forward. I mean, it's just that simple. If you don't have something to believe in and you don't have a vision of where you're going to go and what the expectations are of you there, then you're, and so really, I think that the faith part of me is always evolving too. And I think that it is, I think you have to have it, and you have faith in religion, you have faith in your family, you have faith in your business, you have faith in your body, and all of those things come together. And, you know, if you, you know, faith is the what is it, the unrealized or the expectation of things unseen. And so I think that someday I'm going to meet that version of myself, and I want to make sure that I've left the best impact on the world that I can, so that when I look down and see, I almost got choked up talking about it, you know what?
It's okay to do that, by the way.
when I look down and I see the impact, hopefully, that I have had on the world, and in that journey to become a better person, I helped other people on that journey, and I was a hand down to helping people up, and then was willing to have a hand up for the people that were willing to help me up as well, then it's a good life.
Man, that's incredible. Were you at Brian's peak experience when we talked about the journey wall? Because you've been 17 years now. You probably weren't at the first peak, were you?
I wasn't at the first, but I was 07 in Hawaii. Kona was my first one.
And do you remember the journey wall? You remember that whole thing,
yeah.
Brian did?
Yeah.
So you talk about the hand down to help people up, and the hand up, the you know, reaching up to people to help you up. It's just, you know, we're all on different paths, right? We're all on different paths of our own journey. And I think part of the awareness piece is recognizing when you need a hand up for yourself and when you need to help somebody with a hand to bring them up. And I think that's, I look at you as a really wise guy, not a wise guy like a nut and a cracker.
What are you talking about?
You wise guy. But like a
like
guy,
I'm a clown, like a for your amusement.
Are you laughing at me? What's so funny? Do I look funny? But you share a lot of wisdom, and you're a guy that I could just sit here, man, I could listen to this guy all night. But you just share so much wisdom. And I think, like, in this instance, you know, you just, whoever's listening to this is going to be impacted by this. But another question I have for you is, like, okay, this, you said 2013, you were broke as a joke, right? So here we are, 2022. Okay, the tide might have, you started to get into this thought process back at 13. But when did it start to shift? Because the point I want to make here is it doesn't take a long time.
Would you? No. So when it comes to wealth, one of my favorite expressions is from a guy named Gary Vaynerchuk. And he said, people want to get rich quick, but life is long. It is one of the best pieces of advice that I got about building wealth was, his name's Tim Rhodes. Him and I were talking and he said, Aaron, you get wealthy by hitting base hits.
Yeah.
And a base hit when you're broke is putting $100 into a bank account. It's having $1,000 and lending it and getting $100 back. That's a base hit. It's the same exact thing as lending out $100,000 and getting $10,000 back. They're just, the percentages are exactly the same, but everybody wants the $100,000 to get the $10,000. They're not willing to part with $1,000 for $100, but the math is exactly the same. So it's the little steps of just constantly hitting base hits. Because when you think about baseball, and you said you're a sports guy. So
I'm the baseball guy.
You're the baseball guy. So when you think about baseball and you think about the guys that play the game the longest, they're not the home run kings. The home run kings show up for 3 or 4 years and then they go and they disappear because they're constantly swinging for the fence.
The fences.
And because they're constantly swinging for the fence, as soon as they miss more than they hit, they're out. Because yeah. You got to be on point to do that. The guys that are in the game forever are the ones that when they step up to the plate, they're looking to put the ball between the shortstop and third and first and second or for whatever, in those two places.
Or up the middle. Once
in a while, yeah, or up the middle. And every once in a while, they'll hit one and it'll pop over their head and it's a double. And every great once in a while, the guy will throw a 98-mile fastball and they'll swing for a base hit and it'll fall into the gap and it's a triple. And then in a blue moon, it's everything lines up and they swing. The ball hits exactly the straight sweet spot and it goes over the fence. But they're still swinging for the base hit.
Yeah.
And that's how people get wealthy. If you're constantly swinging for base hits, then every blue moon – hit a double and they'll be like, wow, that was awesome. But all I was doing was trying to hit a base hit. But time, the last 3 years have been crazy as far as I bought my first duplex for $34,000. It's worth $320,000 right now. That's a 10x return. Yeah. And I didn't even spend $34,000. I put $8,000 down because that's all I had at the time. And this is 2011, right? So, but now people look at it and go, that was a home run because I allowed time to work for me and time made it a home run. When I bought it, it was a base hit in a dumpy neighborhood that was the only flipping thing that I could afford and that I had enough money to buy. It was a base hit. It was so bad my wife wouldn't go to that place. It was in such a bad neighborhood. So, but now it's a home run. And yeah. That's the thing that I think that people miss is that they're looking for that instant gratification of how do I take 10,000 and turn it into a million? You take 10,000, you turn it into 11,000. And then 11,000 turns into 12,100. And then that 12,100 turns into 13,300. And you allow your money to work for you. And over time, all of a sudden it's $100,000. And now you're at 100 and now you're getting that 10,000. Same exact return the whole time. You're just playing the game differently.
So time and patience, time and patience.
Time and patience, and then always looking for opportunity. That's the other thing that's different about the average person than a wealthy person is that I will look at any opportunity that is out there. I'll look at buying a business. I'll look at buying a property. I'll look at investing in a fund. I'll look at flipping a house. I mean, I'm open to everything because, and money is never the problem. If you have an opportunity, someone with wealth will partner with you to help you build wealth.
Wow, that's profound. That's profound. Aaron, man, I appreciate it. I usually ask people before, I already asked you who you have the potential to be, and that's the same thing as saying, hey, is there still some chiseling going on in Aaron West's life?
There's so much. I'm still a broken man. There's still a long way to go. Just ask my wife.
But we're all work in progress, right?
We are all work in progress, man. I'm just constantly trying to chisel myself.
Aaron, I got to tell you, man, you've blessed me in this conversation. You've blessed all the listeners, and you're going to continue to bless people. If somebody wanted to get a hold of you, whether it was for real estate in Modesto, California, or whether it's to have a conversation about money and finances and wealth, how would they get a hold of you?
So my business's name is The West Experience. So you can pull that up. It'll come up number one on Google, The West Experience. I'm Aaron West. If you want to reach out to me on Instagram and ask a question or create a relationship, it's The Aaron dot West, the AARON dot West is how you would find me.
That's awesome. Aaron, thank you so much for this time. I am truly grateful. I'm inspired. You got the juices flowing here. And again, it's about time, patience, and discipline, because you are an Iron Man. You're an Iron Man. I mean, literally speaking, you're an Iron Man. And figuratively speaking, you're an Iron Man. You got to be wearing that suit, the Iron Man.
Well, so, I appreciate you, Rob, a lot. I love you like a brother, man. And I'm happy to be on this call.
You're awesome, man. Look, until next time, everybody, let's go get chiseled.
You just got chiseled with Rob Pomodoro. Be sure to like this podcast, share it with your friends, and subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Also, you can find Rob's book on Amazon, Better Than.